to welcome you to Metro's conference call to discuss our full year 2011 results, which were reported today. With us from management today are Mr. Evgeny Mihalkov, Metro CEO, Mr. Stanislav Plotchinkov, Metro CFO, and Mr. Oleg Koржов, Metro Senior Vice President for Economics and Management. After management has made their formal remarks, we will take your questions to the presentation team. Please note that during this call, management will make forward-looking statements, some of which may have been made in the press release. Some of the information on this conference call may contain projections or other forward-looking statements regarding future events or the future financial performance of Metro, as defined in the safe harbor provision of the U.S. Private Securities Litigation Reform Act of 1995. We wish to caution you that these statements are only predictions and that actual events or results may differ materially. We do not intend to update these statements. We refer you to the documents Metro files from time to time with the United States Securities and Exchange Commission, which contain and identify important factors that could cause the actual results to differ materially from those contained in our projections or forward-looking statements. In addition, we'll be using non-GAAP financial measures, including EBITDA, in our discussion today. Reconciliations of non-GAAP financial measures to the most directly comparable U.S. GAAP financial measures are contained in the earnings press release, which is available on our website at www.metro.com. At this point, I would like to turn the call over to Metro's CEO, Mr. Mihalkov. Please go ahead.
Добрый день и доброе утро, дамы и господа. Мы рады вас приветствовать на конференц-звонке по результатам деятельности компании за 2011 год.
Good day and good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the conference call, where we will discuss the company's performance in 2011.
В целом, прошедший 2011 год стал для компании достаточно успешным. Несмотря на неоднозначную конъюнктуру и повышенную волатильность на рынках основной продукции, мы в полной мере воспользовались преимуществами вертикально интегрированной структуры холдинга и добились финансовых результатов, которые в значительной мере превышают соответствующие показатели предшествующего года. Так, консолидированная выручка ООО «Метро» в 2011 году увеличилась на 29% и составила $12.5 миллиарда США. Показатель EBITDA вырос на 19% до $2.4 миллиарда США. Чистая прибыль увеличилась на 11% и составила $728 миллионов США.
On the whole, 2011 was quite successful for the company. Despite an ambiguous price dynamics and high market volatility for our company's key products, we took full advantage of the vertically integrated structure of the holding and achieved financial results that significantly surpassed those of the year before. Metro's consolidated revenue in 2011 increased by 29% and amounted to $12.5 billion. EBITDA went up 19% to $2.4 billion. Net income added 11% and amounted to $728 million.
2011 год стал для нас пиковым с точки зрения реализации стратегических инвестиционных проектов, призванных трансформировать компанию, сделать ее более эффективной и обеспечить лидирующие позиции по основным направлениям деятельности. Уже сегодня можно говорить о конкретных результатах, осуществленных нами на протяжении последних лет инвестиций. В частности, в августе 2011 года мы начали промышленную добычу угля на Ильгинском месторождении, а в конце года завершили прокладку железнодорожного пути, соединившего месторождение с Байкало-Амурской магистралью. Это позволяет существенно облегчить доставку грузов, необходимых для наращивания объемов добычи на Ильге, а также снижает транспортные издержки, связанные с доставкой угля потребителям. Уже в этом году на Ильге планируется завершить работы по строительству сезонной обогатительной фабрики. Ввод в эксплуатацию обогатительной фабрики даст возможность получать концентрат коксующегося угля на месторождении, что значительно повышает эффективность Ильгинского угольного комплекса и открывает возможность для прямых поставок ильгинского концентрата, в том числе и на экспортные рынки.
Strategic investment projects of the company peaked in 2011. These projects are aimed at transforming the company to make it more efficient and a leader in its industry. Today we can present concrete results of the investments made in the course of the last several years. In particular, in August 2011, we started full-scale mining of coal at Ilga deposit, and at the end of the year, a railroad linking the deposit with Baikal-Amur main line was opened. That link will facilitate deliveries of cargo that is needed to increase coal production at Elga and lower transportation costs associated with shipments of coal to customers. This year, we plan to complete construction of the seasonal coal washing facility at Elga. With it, we will be able to produce coking coal concentrate at the deposit, which will improve efficiency of the Elga coal complex and will open up new possibilities for direct delivery of Elga concentrate, including its export.
Говоря о работе горнодобывающего дивизиона Мечела за прошедший год в целом, хотел бы отметить, что несмотря на определенные трудности, связанные с приостановкой на полтора месяца обогатительной фабрики на Якут-Угле, с учетом весьма благоприятной ценовой конъюнктуры, которая наблюдалась в начале года, мы приложили максимум усилий для наращивания производства. В результате нам удалось увеличить объем продаж концентрата коксующегося угля на 9% по сравнению с предыдущим годом. Еще лучшей динамики мы добились в реализации антрацитов и углей PCI, продажи которых выросли на 36% и 332% соответственно. В целом, по итогам года Мечел реализовал 16,8 миллионов тонн металлургического угля и уверенно вошел в тройку ведущих мировых производителей. В течение года Мечел подтвердил и свои лидирующие позиции с точки зрения запасов и ресурсов. В частности, проведенный аудит по стандартам JOC показал, что угольные запасы и ресурсы компании составляют 3,3 миллиарда тонн и 4,4 миллиарда тонн соответственно. Это позволяет нам с уверенностью смотреть в будущее, поскольку стратегия компании, направленная на закрепление лидирующих мировых позиций по добыче металлургического угля, в полной мере обеспечена качественной ресурсной базой.
Speaking about the performance of the Mitchell's mining division in the last year, I have to say that despite certain challenges caused by suspension of operations of the washing plant at Yakut-Ugol for 1.5 months, and with a favorable market price environment since the start of the year, we spared no efforts to build up production. As a result, we raised sales of coking coal concentrate by 9% on the previous year. We managed to achieve an even better dynamics in the sales of anthracite and PCI coal, whose sales grew respectively by 36% and 332%. As of the end of the year, Mitchell sold 16.8 million tons of metallurgical coal and entered top three of the leading global producers. During the year, Mitchell reaffirmed its leadership in reserves and resources. An audit based on JORC standards showed that the company has coal reserves and resources of 3.3 billion tons and 4.4 billion tons respectively. We look confidently into the future as the group's strategy aimed at strengthening its leadership in mining of metallurgical coal is supported by a strong resource base.
Не менее интенсивно в течение года осуществлялась реализация стратегически важных для компании проектов и в металлургическом дивизионе Мечела. За прошедший год нам удалось существенно продвинуться в проекте по строительству универсального лесобалочного стана на Челябинском металлургическом комбинате. К настоящему времени запущена в промышленную эксплуатацию первая очередь этого уникального комплекса. Уже сегодня мы производим высококачественную заготовку для рельсобалочного стана, который обладает всеми необходимыми свойствами для выпуска 100-метровых рельсов повышенной износостойкости, контактной выносливости и низкотемпературной надежности. Отрадно признать, что предпринимавшиеся нами на протяжении последних лет меры по модернизации Белорецкого металлургического комбината в прошедшем году позволили данному предприятию отчитаться о рекордных показателях по производству метизов. На сегодняшний день БМК прочно закрепил за собой лидирующие позиции на российском рынке метизной продукции. В целом, только за 2011 год объем реализованных Мечелом метизов увеличился на 17%, вплотную приближившись к отметке 1 миллион тонн.
Implementation of strategic projects in the Mitchell Steel segment was no less intensive. In the last year, we made significant progress in our project for construction of the universal rolling mill at the Chelyabinsk Metallurgical Plant. By this time, we have put into operation the first stage of this unique integrated steel processing facility. Now, even as we speak, the plant produces high-quality billets for the universal rolling mill with all the properties that are required to manufacture 100-meter rails with increased wear resistance, surface endurance, and low temperature robustness. I note with pleasure that the steps that we were taking for the past 2 years to upgrade the Belaryetsk metallurgical plant enabled that steelworks to report record figures in hardware production in 2011. BMP has established itself firmly as the leader of the Russian hardware market. In 2011 alone, natural sales of hardware products increased by 17%, closely approaching the level of 1 million tons.
Динамично развивалась и наша сервисно-сбытовая сеть. В 2011 году Mitchell Service Global отгрузил более 4,7 миллионов тонн металлопродукции, что на 57% больше результата предшествующего года. Сегодня Mitchell Service Global насчитывает уже 160 подразделений, расположенных в 16 странах, что, среди прочего, придает компании дополнительную гибкость и устойчивость в период сезонных колебаний спроса на металлопродукцию в различных регионах. Это лишний раз нашло свое подтверждение в условиях сложной конъюнктуры рынка в четвертом квартале прошлого года. С учетом развитой инфраструктуры Mitchell Service Global и его широкого присутствия в наиболее привлекательных для нас регионах, в настоящее время на первый план выходит задача перехода от экстенсивного развития к интенсивному. Эту задачу мы будем реализовывать мерами, направленными на расширение набора услуг по обработке металлопроката в условиях складской реализации, что позволяет увеличивать добавленную стоимость реализуемой продукции.
Our services and sales network was also developing very actively. In 2011, Mitchell Service Global shipped more than 4.7 million tons of steel products, 57% more than in the previous year. Today, Mitchell Service Global has 160 offices in 16 countries, which enhances company's flexibility and stability during seasonal fluctuations of demand for steel products in different regions. It was demonstrated once again in the fourth quarter of the last year. Given Mitchell Service Global mature infrastructure and broad presence in the most appealing regions, our current priority is to start developing intensively rather than extensively. We will do that by expanding our services in treatment of rolled products at the storage facility, which will increase added value of products sold.
Подытоживая результаты нашей работы в 2011 году, уважаемые дамы и господа, необходимо сказать несколько слов о том, как мы видим развитие нашего бизнеса в дальнейшем. Как вы успели заметить, на протяжении последних лет производство Mitchell росло опережающими темпами по многим показателям. Мы существенно расширили свою производственную базу, как в плане географического присутствия, так и с точки зрения диверсификации производимой продукции. Параллельно с этим мы осуществляли весьма амбициозную инвестиционную программу, призванную заложить основу для успешного развития компании на годы вперед. Однако следует отметить, что обратной стороной одновременного ускоренного развития во многих направлениях явилось увеличение долговой нагрузки группы Mitchell. В условиях растущего рынка подобная стратегия была оправдана. Вместе с тем, с учетом волатильной конъюнктуры, которую мы наблюдаем с четвертого квартала прошлого года, и отсутствие четких индикаторов роста мировой экономики теми темпами, которые имели место в течение прошедшего десятилетия, мы пришли к выводу, что текущий уровень долга может наложить существенные ограничения на развитие бизнеса. Поэтому одним из основных приоритетов для компании в настоящее время является снижение уровня долга. Для того, чтобы решить эту задачу, необходимо прежде всего ликвидировать причину его дальнейшего роста, который до сих пор являлся экстенсивный рост бизнеса по всем направлениям. В этой связи мы приняли решение о пересмотре стратегии развития, сделав упор на ключевые элементы роста нашего бизнеса, где мы обладаем значительными конкурентными преимуществами и которые поэтому несут наибольший потенциал для увеличения акционерной стоимости компании.
Summing up the results of 2011, ladies and gentlemen, I must say a few words on how we see the development of our business. You must have already observed that in the last several years, Mitchell's production was growing at an accelerated pace in many aspects. We significantly expanded our production base in terms of our geographical presence and products diversification. In parallel with those activities, we were implementing a rather ambitious investment program aimed at laying the foundation for the group's successful development in the years to come. However, the reverse side of that synchronous, accelerated development was the mounting debt of the Mitchell Group. This strategy was justified by the growing market. At the same time, since the fourth quarter of the last year, we have witnessed a lot of market volatility. There are no clear indicators that global economy is growing at the rates that we enjoyed throughout the last decade. All that made us conclude that the current leverage ratio may impose considerable constraints on the development of business. That is why one of the group's priorities today is reduction of debt. In order to achieve that objective, we must remove the very driver of its further growth, extensive business development in all areas. In this connection, we decided to review the development strategy to put an emphasis on the key elements of our business's growth, our competitive advantages, which offer the highest potential for increase of the shareholder value.
Новая стратегия основана, как и прежде, на концепции вертикально интегрированного горно-металлургического холдинга, которая доказала свои преимущества для цикличных секторов индустрии и устойчивость в периоды турбулентности на рынках сбыта. Однако в рамках вертикально интегрированного холдинга наш фокус будет сосредоточен только на следующих перспективных направлениях. Во-первых, это приоритетное развитие горнодобывающего дивизиона, основой которого являются одни из крупнейших в мире запасов коксующегося угля. Мы считаем, что уникальная комбинация богатейшей ресурсной базы, географической и продуктовой диверсификации, близости к ключевым рынкам сбыта, относительно низких издержек производства, обеспеченности собственной логистикой и огромного опыта реализации проектов горной добычи имеет наибольший потенциал для увеличения прибыльности и добавленной стоимости для наших акционеров, и мы обязаны ее реализовать. Я не зря упоминал собственную логистику. Для успешной монетизации тех запасов, которые создают основу нашей стоимости, контроль над транспортной составляющей, включая портовые мощности, является важным фактором, и на него также будет направлена часть наших усилий по развитию горнодобывающего дивизиона.
The new strategy is based, as before, on the concept of a vertically integrated mining and metallurgy holding, which has proven its merits in the context of industrial cycles and stability in the times of turbulence in the sales market. Our focus in the vertically integrated holding will be on the following objectives. First, prioritize development of the mining division on the basis of the coking coal reserves among the largest in the world. We believe that a unique combination of the richest resource base, geography and product diversification, closeness to the key sales markets, relatively low production costs, group's own logistics capabilities, and enormous experience with projects in the mining industry has the great potential for high profitability and added value for our shareholders, and we must unlock that potential. There is a reason why I mention our own logistics. To succeed in monetizing the reserves on which our value is built, control over transportation components, including ports, is a crucial factor. It will also be in the center of our attention in the context of the mining division development.
Во-вторых, мы намерены увеличить прибыльность нашего бизнеса за счет упрочнения позиции Мечела как крупнейшего игрока на рынке России и стран СНГ в строительном металлургическом ассортименте, задействовав такие конкурентные преимущества, как крупнейшая в стране сервисно-сбытовая сеть и наиболее полный спектр металлургической продукции, предлагаемой конечному потребителю. Введение в эксплуатацию универсального рельсобалочного стана, проекта, который находится на финальной стадии реализации, еще больше усилит нашу лидирующую позицию на этом рынке, существенно расширив продуктовую линейку и гарантирует нам значительную долю во всех крупных инфраструктурных проектах на ближайшее десятилетие, что найдет свое отражение в финансовом результате и денежном потоке.
Second, we intend to increase profitability of our business by cementing Mechel's position as the largest player in Russia and the CIS in the market of steel products for the construction industry. Among our competitive advantages in that market are the largest service and sales network in the country and a comprehensive range of steel products for the end customer. When the universal rolling mill is put into operation, and this project has reached its final stage, our leadership in this market will become stronger. We will expand our product range even further, which will guarantee us a tangible share in all major infrastructure projects in the coming decades, and which will be reflected in the financial results and cash flow.
В-третьих, одно из конкурентных преимуществ нашего металлургического дивизиона – это существенная доля на рынках продукции с высокой добавленной стоимостью, прежде всего спецсталей, нержавеющего проката и метизов, где по производству целого ряда продуктов мы занимаем первое место в России. Это преимущество подкреплено не только значительной долей рынка, но уникальными технологиями, развивая которые, можно существенно расширить продуктовую линейку и улучшить качество, что еще больше скажется на прибыльности этого бизнеса. Развитая европейская сеть Mechel Service Global дает нам возможность не только со временем заместить импорт продукции данного сегмента в Россию, но и нарастить экспорт в Европу, где мы уже продаем продукцию как собственного производства, так и производство третьих лиц, что дает нам представление о потенциале роста продаж в этом сегменте.
Third, a competitive advantage of our steel division is its material share of the high value-added products, primarily specialty steels, stainless rolled products and hardware. We are number one in Russia in production of some of these products. This lead is founded on a sizable market share and unique technologies. If we advance those technologies, we will be able to significantly extend the product line and improve the quality, which will contribute even more to profitability of this business. An extensive European network of mutual service global allows us not only to substitute imported products of this segment into Russia, but to build up exports to Europe. We have a good understanding of the potential growth of sales in this segment, since we already sell our own and third-party products in Europe.
Данные элементы стратегии позволят нам сконцентрироваться на тех направлениях бизнеса, которые являются наиболее прибыльными и одновременно обеспечивают группе лидирующие позиции в соответствующих сегментах рынка. Они также задают нам четкие критерии относительно структуры нашего бизнеса и необходимости владения и управления теми или иными активами для реализации новой стратегии. В этой связи мы уже начали проводить анализ всех наших активов на их соответствие озвученным критериям и вклад в реализацию общей стратегии. Мы также будем оценивать альтернативные издержки владения этими активами, которые достаточно велики при текущем уровне долга и инвестиционной программе, которую необходимо реализовать. Те активы, которые не пройдут тест, будут реализованы, что также поможет снижению уровня долга. Мы убеждены в том, что в наше время, характеризующееся огромными нереализованными возможностями, но одновременно нестабильностью на ключевых рынках, включая финансовые, необходимо быть готовыми к принятию кардинальных решений, чтобы сохранить и развить свои конкурентные преимущества. Я уверен, что новая стратегия, утвержденная сегодня Советом директоров нашей компании, позволит нам не только повысить стоимость бизнеса уже в среднесрочной перспективе, но также улучшить операционно-денежный поток и снизить долговую нагрузку Мечела, оптимальным уровнем которой считаем для себя отношение чистого долга к EBITDA не более чем 2 к 1, в том числе и за счет реализации неприоритетных активов. А теперь я хотел бы передать слово старшему вице-президенту по финансам Станиславу Площенко, который расскажет о финансовых результатах за 2011 год и осветит положение стратегии более подробно. Спасибо за внимание.
This strategy will provide a focus on those areas of business that are most profitable and at the same time that secure the group's leading positions in the respective segments of the market. It will also set clear criteria for the structure of our business and the need to own and manage certain assets in the context of the new strategy implementation. To that end, we have already started reviewing all our assets, their conformity to the listed criteria and contribution to the strategy's execution. We will also assess alternative costs of owning these assets. Today, they are relatively high, given the current level of debt and the investment program which must be carried out. Assets which won't pass the test will be divested, thus reducing our gearing. We are convinced that in the present days there are abundant opportunities, as well as instability in the key markets, and also financial markets. And we must be ready to take bold decisions to maintain and develop one's competitive advantages. I'm certain that the new strategy approved today by the Board of Directors will not only ensure a high value of business already in the midterm, but will also improve operational cash flow and lower Mitchell's leverage to what we believe to be the optimal level of net debt to EBITDA of not more than 2-to-1 through the sale of non-priority assets, among other things. And now I pass the floor to Stanislav Ploshenko, Senior Vice President for Finance, who will cover our financial results for 2011 and details of the revised strategy. Thank you for your attention.
Ladies and gentlemen, good morning and good afternoon. We will begin the overview as usual with the results of the mining segment. The fourth quarter was quite challenging, largely due to the uncertainties our customers faced from acceleration of the European sovereign debt crisis in the second half of 2011. These uncertainties led to a significant decrease in European steel production and to a less extent globally, which could not leave our key sales markets unaffected. Although our fourth quarter coking coal sales and physical volumes remained flat quarter on quarter, the average FCA price decreased by 12% to $181 a ton, with a $66 million negative effect on the net revenue. Coke sales volumes were also off quarter-on-quarter by 38%, while the sales price was down by 6% to $291 a CA. That reduced the revenue by another $46 million. Other met coal, that is to say anthracite and PCI, on the contrary, was a bright spot as it was all year. The market notwithstanding, we were able to increase quarter-on-quarter sales volumes by 27%, which along with flat FCA prices at around $104 per ton, contributed $52 million to the revenue from third parties. Steam coal sales volumes decreased by 16%, although the flat to slightly positive price dynamics due to high season did not have a sensible impact on the revenue. As a matter of fact, the share of thermal coal fell to just 3% of the third-party revenue in Q4, as you can see on slide number 6, which means it can hardly have an effect on the total picture and is fully in line with our strategy to focus on met coal. Iron ore FCA prices decreased by 5% to $101 a ton. However, an 8% growth in sales volumes quarter-on-quarter offset the price effect on the revenue completely. Overall, mining segment revenue decreased by 7% to just $1.061 billion in Q4. The intersegment revenue, on the contrary, grew by 5% to $264 million. It would also be interesting to take a look at the change in geography of sales on the same slide. As you can see, the high volatility of sales in Q4 affected mostly international sales, pushing the sales to Russian CIS from 30% in Q3 to 38% of total sales in Q4. Amongst others, the sales to China were affected most of all, as its share decreased from 28% to 23%, with the rest of Asia growing from 13% to 18%. The total share of Asia at the same time remained unchanged at 41% of sales. This example illustrates the benefits of sales diversification, which we have been pursuing over the past several years. It fully paid off in the fourth quarter, when China proved again to be probably the most volatile market for met coal. Faced with increased volatility in our core markets and decreasing revenue in some of our mining products, the management dedicated all its efforts to keep the cash cost under control. And we are proud to say that we achieved a considerable success here. Cash costs at Southern Kuzbass, Yakutugul held steady at $35 and $32 per ton, respectively, despite high season for maintenance, power, and fuel expenses. Cash costs at Koshinov iron ore plant ticked up only by $1 to $42 per ton. At the same time, cash costs at our North American operations increased by $17 to $113 per ton. This was driven by a 9% decrease in sales volumes quarter-on-quarter, as the decreased European steel production most directly impacted our Bluestone operations. As of the end of the year, we took two mines, Spider Ridge and Job 32, temporarily offline, as it is not economical to operate them in the current environment. Taking these two mines offline in conjunction with other cost-saving measures, we plan to get cash cost per ton back under $100. Overall cost of sales in Q4 decreased relative to Q3 by 5% to $582 million. That decrease versus a 7% fall in revenue led to the gross income quarter-on-quarter decline by 5% to $744 million, remaining, however, at the same 56% of the segment revenue as in the previous quarter, protecting the profitability of the segment. Selling and distribution expenses decreased by 37% to $167 million. The decrease was primarily driven by two factors: a 4% decrease in overall segment sales volumes and an increase in the portion of sales on the FCA basis as opposed to DAF and CPT. To illustrate the effect of the shift to FCA sales in Q4, the selling and distribution expenses as a percentage of third-party revenue decreased from 23% to 16%. Non-profit taxes posted a gain on $3.5 million in Q4 versus a $15 million expense in Q3 due to a $20 million correction of the mineral extraction tax for the previous periods at our Russian coal and iron ore operations, following the recalculation of the taxable base using the production costs, as opposed to the previous calculation based on the average sales prices. Administrative and other operating expenses increased quarter-on-quarter by 11% to $84 million, primarily due to a decrease in gain from disposals of fixed assets. The cumulative effect of all of the above translated into an almost 16% quarter-on-quarter increase in mining EBITDA to $593 million, or 45% of total segment sales, up from 37% in the previous quarter and the highest since the third quarter of 2008. It probably should go without saying that we're quite pleased with such a result, given the difficult market environment prevailing during that period. The net interest expense decreased over the same period by 46% to $30 million, largely due to a notable reduction in bank interest rates for the mining segment in Q4, as profitability of the segment improved and refinancing of certain debt attributed earlier to the mining segment by the steel segment. Profit taxes were 12% down quarter-on-quarter to $46 million, the fall attributable to a combination of growth of the segment taxable income, resulting in additional $37 million of income tax, an increase of $44 million in deferred tax benefit, related mostly to change of future corporate taxes in Bluestone. The segment also recorded a $39 million FX gain in Q3, as compared to $290 million loss in the previous quarter, given a translation difference of $329 million, and I was referring to Q4, where we had a $39 million FX gain. As a result, the net profit was quarter-on-quarter up by $425 million. For the full year, our mining segment realized sales to third parties of $4,140 million, an increase of 36% over the level of 2010. The increased revenue was driven by sales growth in all our key products except for thermal coal, the reduction of which is consistent with our stated strategy of further processing into PCI raw coal previously sold into the thermal coal market. In particular, coking coal sales were up by 16% in physical terms, despite the temporary halt of the washing plant at Yekutugul due to an accident in December 2009. PCI and anthracite sales were up 112% tonnage-wise, at the expense of steam coal, where sales volumes fell by 16%. It is also notable that price dynamics were also positive comparing 2011-2010, with only average realized steam coal price down 22%, as proportion of middlings and lower quality thermal coal in our sales increased, with high quality coal processed into PCI. Inter-segment revenue also grew by 31% to $1,052 million, largely through sales to the steel segment, where a combination of iron ore supplies increased by over 1 million tons and coke supply decreased by 130,000 tons, coupled with growing sales prices, led to $181 million inter-segment revenue growth. Although we managed to put cash costs under control in the fourth quarter, they averaged high in 2011 versus 2010 due to overall increase in input prices for electricity, fuel, and labor, as well as scale effect, the temporary closure and then under-capacity utilization of the washing plant at Yekutugul in the first half of the year and closure of Sibelginska mine at southern Kuzbass in June. The combination of revenue and cost dynamics resulted in the gross income margin ticking up only by 1% to 56% of the revenue. Operating expenses grew by 28% to $1,196 million, largely driven by selling and distribution expenses, which grew in line with sales. At the same time, the share of these expenses in the segment revenue declined from 24% in 2010 to 23% in 2011. For the full year, EBITDA increased by 38% to $2,024 million, or 39% of the revenue, 1% up from previous year margin. Net interest expenses decreased by 15% to $171 million due to an overall reduction in interest rates. The superior profitability growth of the mining segment led to a 63% increase in income tax expenses, which reached $303 million in 2011. The ruble depreciation in 2011 resulted in a $61 million loss on currency translation versus a $9 million gain in 2010. The resulting effect on the segment's bottom line was a 41% year-on-year improvement to $1,070 million, or 21% of the revenue. Now let us turn to the steel segment. The downturn in the financial and commodity markets in the fourth quarter affected the steel segment's performance most. The prices experienced correction across the entire product range. However, the long steel did not suffer as much as flat products, where downward dynamics were more pronounced. FCA price for carbon and low alloy sheet moved 10%, stainless flat 12% down. At the same time, long steel, semi-finished products and hardware, which constituted 74% of the segment's fourth quarter sales, experienced a much less pronounced turbulence, with prices for rebar and wire down 8 and 7% respectively, billet and engineering steel 8 and 6% respectively, alloyed long steel 4% down. The pressure in our key products was partly alleviated by the contraction in sales volumes as MSG was restocking for the winter season. The supply-demand situation was also different in Russia and Europe, which are our key sales markets. The downturn in European demand was more pronounced, fueled by distressed financial markets, whereas in Russia, despite the seasonal slowdown in sales to the construction sector, the downward movement in price halted in the end of November and remarkably stayed at that level through the entire winter, which was exceptionally harsh both in Russia and Eastern Europe. The physical sales volumes of higher value-added products with longer cash conversion cycle were also affected more, as stainless flat volumes went down by 14%, engineering steel by 16%, alloyed long products by 13%. In comparison, the physical sales volumes of rebar reduced only by 8% and stampings by 6%, the only item where realized price grew by 3% in the reported period. In order to counter the reduction in cash flow resulting from lower sales, we increased the trade and billet, where sales volumes grew by 18%, mostly on account of sales of third-party product supplied by Russian steel mills. The combination of the volumes and price dynamics described above led to the third-party revenue decreasing by 14% to $1,541,000,000. Despite a reduction in cash costs due to a similar downward trend in input prices, the cost of rebar at Chelyabinsk went down by 13% to $511 a ton. The gross income fell by 64% to $119 million, or 7.3% of the revenue. The selling and distribution expenses grew by 8% to $147 million due to a substantial increase in export sales of billet mentioned above. In the environment which imposed a significant stress on the cash flows, the company took certain measures to improve the collection of receivables, which led to a reverse in the doubtful accounts provision by almost $9 million as compared to the third quarter. The administrative expenses were also cut by 19% to $54 million, going from 4% to just 3% of the segment's revenue, largely due to a reduction in pension liability as a result of the pension plan amendments. Despite these measures, the segment's fourth quarter EBITDA fell by $203 million to post a $50 million negative figure. The FX loss of $22 million was almost equal to that posted in the previous quarter. Income tax expense grew more than four times quarter on quarter to $20 million as a result of an adjustment of the effective tax rate at Ishtal, as well as FX income realized at a number of subsidiaries due to repayment of dollar-denominated loans. The result was a $194 million net loss in the fourth quarter versus an $18 million profit for the previous period. Comparing the full year 2011 with the previous one, we still see a considerable 28% growth in top line to a record $7,154,000,000, fueled by the expansion of sales in Russia and Europe, along with other increase in steel in sales prices. Despite a contraction of Europe's share in Q4 revenues to 22%, as you can observe on the slide number 8, in the annual sales, Europe's share grew from 18% in 2010 to 23% in 2011. That is explained by two factors. The fast-growing distribution network of MSG in Europe, supported by growth share in finished products in the segment's revenue, which rose from 73% to 79% as our previously completed investment began to bear fruit. The rising prices for raw feed, however, in particular coal and iron ore, did not allow the gross profit to grow at the same rate as the revenue, the former having increased by only $20 million over the figure of 2010, posting $1,127,000,000. The operating cost grew by 16% to $127 million, largely due to 17% growth in selling and distribution expenses, which increased to $614 million as our sales grew dramatically year on year. The thinner margins we have seen in 2011 and the market downturn in the last quarter resulted in negative EBITDA dynamics, which decreased by 23% year on year to $319 million. The net interest expense of the segment grew by sensible 59% to $360 million, $306 million, mostly on the account of inter-segment expenses, which increased by $70 million year on year. That was largely due to different allocation of loans between segments, as the loans previously attributed to the ferroalloy segment and related to the acquisition of Oriol Resources were repaid in the second half of 2010 through refinancing largely allocated to the steel segment. The 81 million dollar FX loss in 2011. Can we compare it to only $7 million dollars in 2010, as ruble depreciated faster during the reported year? That all resulted in a net loss of $233 million in 2011 versus $91 million of income in the previous year. The quarterly revenue dynamics in the ferroalloy segment were influenced by a combination of a slow downward price trend across all the products and increase in sales volumes in nickel and chrome, countered by a temporary decrease in ferrosilicon sales. The ferronickel realized price experienced the biggest quarterly decrease, 15%, to almost $18,000 FCA. The third-party sales volumes grew, on the contrary, to 46% to 3.5 thousand tons. That was all at the expense of decreased inter-segment sales, as the ferronickel stock accumulated in our steel segment in the third quarter was sufficient to last into the fourth one. The chrome third-party sales volumes grew by almost 18% to 14.5 thousand tons. Inter-segment sales volumes also increased by 65% as production of chrome concentrate at Vashod and consequently chrome smelting in Tikhvin continued to grow. The realized price edged only by slight 4% down to $2,180. A similar price dynamics was observed for ferrosilicon, down 5% quarter-on-quarter to $1,363 a ton, at the time when third-party physical sales volumes fell by 17% to 9.9 thousand tons due to a halt of the one of the four furnaces for modernization in August 2011, partly compensated by high inter-segment sales volumes. The furnace was subsequently relaunched in March 2012. As increase of third-party physical sales volumes led by nickel sales outpaced the price consolidation, the third-party revenue grew by 12% to almost $116 million in Q4. At the same time, a sharp decrease in inter-segment nickel sales by 73% to only $16 million led to the overall segment's revenue fall by 19% quarter-on-quarter. The cash cost of ferrochrome decreased by 5% to $2,047 a ton, as a 9% increase in the cash cost of chrome concentrate attributable to seasonal factors was more than offset by ruble depreciation and overall increase in production in the fourth quarter. Nickel cash costs remained flat at $20,600, as seasonal increase in use of coke was offset by a slight decrease in coke prices and ruble depreciation. At the same time, cash cost of ferrosilicon production grew slightly by 4% to $912 a ton due to a temporary decrease in production. The combination of these factors led to a 6% decrease in cost of sales, lower than revenue, resulting in a thin gross profit margin in the third quarter, reversed to a $19 million negative figure on a gross basis in Q4. The selling expenses decreased by 52% to $3.5 million due to the reclassification of the inter-segment transportation cost to the cost of sales. If that effect is stripped off, the selling expenses would have stayed at the level of the third quarter, a share of revenue rising from 4.4% to 5.6% as the third-party revenue decreased. This is due to the effect of higher export sales of nickel and chrome volume-wise, as prices for these products were, on the contrary, decreasing. Consequently, the operating expenses fell by 23% to less than $17 million in Q4. This, however, did not help to offset the fall in the gross item, which led to the fourth quarter EBITDA posting a negative figure of $11 million versus $2.8 million income in the preceding period. Net interest expenses fell quarter-on-quarter by almost 80% to just $1.5 million, largely due to a change of allocation of external loans between the segments, as discussed above in the steel segment analysis. The FX effect in the ferroalloy segment posted a $2.6 million negative figure as dollar appreciated versus a $15.6 million gain in the third quarter. The income tax expense of $1.4 million can be compared to an asset of $1.3 million in the third quarter. That increase was mostly due to an additional $4.1 million income tax that was hot, accrued following into the full utilization of tax loss carried forward. Comparing the years 2011-2010, the third-party revenue from the ferroalloy segment grew only by 4% to $475 million. Inter-segment sales improved more, having demonstrated a 15% growth to almost $200 million. While the price dynamics year-on-year were not dramatic, nickel and ferrosilicon SA prices rising by 9 and 6% respectively, while chrome prices remaining flat, a 15% increase in chrome physical sales was balanced off by a 14% reduction in ferrosilicon sales due to a temporary halt of one of the four furnaces in the second half of the year for modernization. Operating expenses grew by 8% to $78 million, along with growing export sales of chrome. In 2011, the segment contributed $46 million of EBITDA to the consolidated number versus $94 million in the previous year. The reduction is largely due to higher cost per ton of nickel and ferrosilicon affecting the profitability of the entire segment, the former due to a substantially higher average price of coke, while the latter affected by lower production and sales volumes in the second half of the year due to the modernization of the furnace that I just mentioned. The net loss, however, more than halved year-on-year from $186 million to $71 million. The decrease in the gross profit of $62 million was offset by a similar decrease in income tax expense due to a revaluation of the income tax liability at Восход Орел, recognizing a cancellation of the statutory tax reduction from 20 to 15% that we reported in our 2010 accounts. Decrease in interest expenses added another $78 million to the bottom line. However, $70 million of that decrease was transferred to other segments, primarily steel, due to change of intercompany loans allocation. The FX effect added $41 million to the net income, as the year 2011 posted a $24 million gain versus a $17 million loss in the previous one. The fourth quarter was traditionally good for the power segment due to high season for electricity and heat consumption. The revenue grew by 28% quarter-on-quarter to $211 million. The cost of sales, on the contrary, decreased by 7%, largely due to a substantial increase in heat and electricity generation. At Southern Kuzbass Power Plant, the cash cost per megawatt hour decreased from $50 in the third quarter to $34 only. Inter-segment sales also grew by 12% to $126 million, driven by the same factors. As a result, the gross profit shot 87% up to almost $90 million. The gross margin improved from 17% in the third quarter to almost 27% in the fourth one. Not surprisingly, selling and distribution expenses increased by 19% quarter-on-quarter to $67 million due to higher transmission charges as sales grew significantly. Administrative expenses also increased by $19 million, largely due to a $4.7 million provision for asset retirement obligation at Southern Kuzbass Power Plant and an $8.5 million difference between the preliminary value of emission rights at Toplofikatsia Russia posted as of the end of the third quarter and the result of the power plant's final appraisal for accounting purposes done in the fourth one. The combination of higher gross profit and operation expenses affected by mentioned above one-off effect on administrative expenses summed up to a $3 million EBITDA for the fourth quarter versus a $7 million negative figure in the previous one. The FX effect on the segment's P&L was negligible. The net interest expenses of $4.1 million remained virtually unchanged. The income tax expense grew by $4 million quarter and quarter as profitability significantly improved due to a high season. As a result, the net loss more than halved quarter-on-quarter to just $5.9 million. For the full year 2011, the segment increased its revenue from third parties by 19% to $778 million, as a slight increase in physical sales volumes due to maintenance was more than compensated by the growth in tariffs. The inter-segment sales also increased by 24% to $507 million. However, due to a similar increase in costs, as coal price demonstrated a superior growth in 2011 versus 2010 levels, the gross income grew only by 3% to $308 million. Therefore, a 13% growth in operating expenses, largely driven by growth in transmission tariff, not unexpectedly led to a 40% reduction in the segment's EBITDA to just under $37 million. This coupled with a 2x increase in administrative expenses, driven entirely by the fourth quarter one-offs, described earlier, were the reason behind the reversal of the net income of almost $17 million in 2010 into a $5.8 million loss in 2011. it would be fair to say that despite electricity tariff growth in 2011, the economics of the power segment were transferred to the mining one through the increase of the market price for thermal coal. The combined segment's results led to a 9% quarter-on-quarter decrease in the consolidated revenue to $2.9 billion, which, on almost flat costs of goods sold, resulted in a 21% reduction of the gross income to $934 million, or 32% of the revenue versus 37% in Q3. The EBITDA decreased by 21% quarter-on-quarter to $536 million. The $296 million FX loss posted in the third quarter reversed into a $14 million gain in the fourth one. The income tax expense increased by 30%, largely due to the factors described in the steel segment discussion. All that resulted in a $201 million net income for the fourth quarter, which can be compared with only $26 million in the previous one. Overall, for the full year 2011, the business increased the revenue by almost 30% to $12.5 billion and gross profit by 20% to $4.3 billion, or 35% of sales. The consolidated EBITDA also rose by almost 20% to near $2.4 billion, that growth entirely attributable to the mining segment. The net interest expense remained virtually unchanged at $544 million. The depreciating throughout the reporting period ruble led to an 8 times increase in FX loss to $117 million, which, coupled with a 30% growth in income tax as profitability improved, could not offset the superior dynamics in the operating result and ended up in an 11% year-on-year increase in the net income to $728 million. Now, let us turn to the cash flow and balance sheet analysis. The volatility in our core markets in Q4 and uncertainty about further market development substantially increased the risks of the business, which had been growing very rapidly in the previous financial periods. Having enjoyed almost 2 years of positive market dynamics in a post-crisis recovery, we have invested substantial efforts and resources in taking advantage of our superior position in coal and steel markets, having, amongst others, capitalized on our strong presence in long steel market and the biggest steel distribution platform in Russia. The latter has been allocated a significant part of our investment in the working capital, having grown its European operations, almost non-existent prior to the 2008 crisis, to the same size as its Russian operations in sales volumes. The investments in the distribution also gave us another advantage. Being a Tier 1 producing and selling company in this segment, we have successfully used our position to increase our market share at the expense of smaller and weaker players, which had suffered more during the crisis. However, these achievements were paid for with a significant investment in the working capital, which totaled $1,423 million in 2010 and another $1,272 million for the first 9 months of 2011. This strategy was justified in a rapidly growing market where a sharp improvement in competitive advantage in a struggle for market share, which in its turn would guarantee stable sales and cash flow, was worth the investments made. However, the abrupt change in the market environment and significant decrease in market visibility witnessed in Q4 made it clear that the investments in the rapid growth of business we had been making are becoming excessively costly and become a direct competitor for funds to the investment that we have been making in the fixed assets and new projects like Elga and the Universal Rolling Mill. This competition has become very narrow as our net debt grew to almost $9.3 billion and the consolidated EBITDA decreased by 21% in Q4. Our net debt to EBITDA ratio shot up to 3.9 times, entailing negotiations over a covenant breach with our banks and limitation on further debt raising. Faced with this choice in the fourth quarter, we have carried out a rethink of our global strategy and laid out the three pillars which have been mentioned by Mr. Michel and measures to be taken short to medium term in order to dramatically improve our financial position and return our market capitalization to the level where it will reflect the true value of our business. These measures will concentrate around two targets we will be pursuing in the next at least 2 years. Number one, improvement in the cash flows. In the fourth quarter 2011, we halted the expansion of MSG, which had been our main cash consumer lately. We believe we have grown a significant enough franchise to comfortably retrench and dedicate our efforts to improve the economics of its cooperation with our producing assets and other market players without the need to struggle to even a higher market share, which will require more resources. We have also taken a few measures to curb inventory built-up in the volatile market and lay a path for their gradual reduction. We changed the production plan so that our production fully reflects current sales, including any overinvestments in the working capital. We further improved the management of receivables and payables in Q4 2011 and Q1 2012. Despite the fact that any change in production profile takes 2-3 months to be visualized in sales, all these efforts led to a dramatic improvement in the group's cash flow already in the fourth quarter 2011. The working capital, excluding change in settlement with the related parties, consumed only $62 million of cash versus $202 million in Q3 and $984 million for the entire first 9 months of the last year. That figure looks even more impressive if we remember that Q4 is usually a low season for steel when inventory builds up before the year-end and Christmas holidays. Looking ahead, I am proud to say that we achieved an even more visible success in 2012 to this date in managing the inventory. The stock at MSG's warehouses has been reduced from around 1.33 million tons as of the end of December 2011 to 1.1 million tons as of today, or almost by 20% during the period, most of which was low season with exceptionally harsh winter both in Russia and Europe. It is even more impressive having the average realized price not changing much over this period, implying we have not been subsidizing volumes from pricing. We plan to take the stock down by at least 150,000 tons more for the second half of 2012. This reduction since the beginning of the year is expected to release approximately $350 million of cash. Apart from inventory and payables management, we took certain measures to protect our P&L and cash flow from further deterioration in the marketplace, which would not affect not only the group, but our partners, which are beyond our control, but only through market instruments. As you know, we have extensively cooperated with a number of independent steel mills in Russia and abroad, which brought us a substantial advantage in terms of market share and complementary product range, enabling us to extract better terms, including pricing, in the post-crisis years. Our biggest partner so far has been Estar Group, which we accounted for as related party transactions in our financials since 2009. However, in return, we invested over $1 billion in our relationship through working capital, Estar being by far the largest investee with $880 million exposure as of the end of 2011, up from $420 million 12 months before. Having faced a changed market environment and curbing our expansion in steel, we decided that in the new circumstances, we cannot afford to keep investing in our relationships as we saw even the present exposure be at risk should the market volatility continue. Consequently, we took steps to ensure that in the worst scenario, the group's cash flow will not be risked here further. At best, we would recover this exposure fully. In order to realize this opportunity, we entered a loan agreement for $945 million with the owners of Estar, secured with shares and guarantees from essentially all its assets. The proceeds of this loan were used to repay the related party receivables, just enough to keep our exposure to them at the current working level. The loan expires on September 30, 2012. Should the loan be not repaid, we will recover it through entering into possession of Estar assets of around 2.3 million tons of smelting and 2.7 million tons of rolling capacity. As the settlement of receivables with Estar continues into 2012, the settlements with related parties item reflected $679 million in our cash flow statements, pushing cash flow from operations to a remarkable $937 million in the fourth quarter. It is notable, though, that even stripping the related party effect, the operating cash flow rose to $258 million. This impressive achievement was largely due to the measures I mentioned above. This was all related to the target number one, improvement in cash flows. Target number two that we will be pursuing in the next 2 years, and that will take significantly more efforts helping to improve the cash flow, is significant deleverage of our business. Our net debt rose 7% quarter-on-quarter to $9.3 billion as of the end of 2011, or 3.9 annual backward-looking EBITDA, the level that we regard unacceptable in the medium to long run for our business, especially having a very high volatility in the operating results. Although we have managed to service our debt from the operating cash flow and meet all the repayments, having seen even higher relative indebtedness levels in 2009-2011, the present size and structure of debt imposes significant limitations on our ability to invest in key projects and hence on our growth in the selected business segments. We therefore adopted since the beginning of the year a policy of balanced cash flow from operations and investments, which would limit our gross debt at the current levels. We revised our investment program and postponed all the projects which were either in the startup stage or not our key priorities, factually limiting our capex to only three: the completion of the universal rolling mill at Chelyabinsk this year, further development of Elga, and completion of the modernization of Port Pasiet, where capacity increase is essential for monetization of our mining assets. If we turn to Q4 numbers, we see that investment cash flow demonstrated a substantial increase to $1.2 billion. However, clean of the loan to EFTAR, it was $496 million, $76 million thereof attributable to new acquisitions, most of it to the acquisition of DMZ. That leaves only $436 million to purchase of property, plant and equipment, 29% down versus Q3, which was the result of the capex cutting program we began to implement in the fourth quarter. Although we had planned a larger reduction, we made a decision to complete the projects which were near completion in order to minimize their capex and move the project into the payback phase, most importantly the railroad to Elga, which we had to finalize by the year end. Now that the project is done, we have more leeway on our investment program. The capex has already been reduced to $1.2 billion for 2012. Subsequently, we plan to spend no more than $1.2 billion in 2013 and $900 million in 2014. All this capex will be subject to the operating cash flow balancing policy described above, which will ensure that the net debt will not exceed the current level. The experience since the beginning of the year has demonstrated that we have been successful in following this path so far. As our previously completed investments pay back and newly launched equipment begins to generate cash, we plan the operating cash flow to exceed the investments by $900 million over the next 4 years, including 2012, as you can see on the slide number 13, even if the market trends remain flat for the forecast period, all the delta directed at debt reduction. That estimate is done on the basis of a basic scenario where working capital will continue to grow, fueling expansion of sales, and the market remaining relatively volatile as they are today. However, as you can see on that slide, under a more optimistic scenario where the working capital is kept at a normalized level if the market conditions improve, its cash release capacity gives an additional resource to decrease the debt by further $2 billion over the same period. That will limit future sales volume growth, especially in the steel segment, but help to deliver faster should the circumstances require. Nonetheless, although we expect to gradually deleverage through the superior operating cash flow, only that will not bring us to the target of 2-1 in terms of net debt to EBITDA in the medium term, which is the level where we feel enough room for further large investment and new growth projects. In order to achieve that, we will be taking unconventional for our group steps suggested by the strategy we highlighted above. As Mr. Michel stated, by grouping our assets around the said three pillars of our competitive advantage, we will be considering all assets which do not fit the core of our strategy or where opportunity costs of operating them exceed the incremental economics they contribute to the group, a subject for divestment. As far as the structure of the debt and covenant package are concerned, we have taken certain measures which led to remarkable improvement on this front, which we are proud to deliver. As we recently announced, we successfully finalized negotiations with all our creditors, which resulted in a significant amendment of our covenant package. The net debt to EBITDA covenant has been lifted to 5.5 times through the end of the year 2012, coming down to 4.75 and 4.4 as of June 30th and December 31st, 2013, respectively, then 3.75 and 3.5 as of the end of June and end of December 2014. 3.25 times at the end of June 2015, and finally to the run rate of 3-1 starting from the year end 2015. These new levels were to provide for a high oscillation in the group's EBITDA should market volatility increase again. The maturity structure of our debt also experienced a significant revamp to date. Since the beginning of the year, we completed several transactions. $500 million or five-year loan from Gazprom Bank, as another $460 million PTB debt was extended by 5 years, $167 million worth of ruble-denominated bond, and another $500 million worth of ruble commercial paper placed with VTB, altogether $1.6 billion of long-term debt. All these funds have fully been utilized to meet current repayments and repay short-term debt. Our most recent achievements was signing of 22 billion ruble worth of 3 to 5 year facilities with Gazprom Bank, which we will be utilizing to repay the debt with shorter maturities in May and June. This has brought the amount of debt repayable till the end of 2012 to just $1.6 billion, which is more than manageable, having currently $2 billion worth of cash and unutilized bank limits to our disposal, as you can see on the slide number 15. Additionally, our investment program is insured by $531 million of committed project-related long-term facilities. Our further actions are aimed at diversification of long-term instruments. After stabilization of our credit rating, which is now at B1 with negative outlook, we plan to tap Eurobond markets, which could be towards the year-end or in the first half of 2013, after we have demonstrated certain deleveraging. We also plan to continue to use ruble bonds and commercial paper, which has proven to be an efficient instrument to diversify from bank debt into an unsecured, covenant-free, long-term public debt. To sum up, ladies and gentlemen, the results demonstrated by our business in 2011 reflect significant growth achieved in the previous years and the potential yet to be realized. In order to do that, we need to undertake significant changes in our business combination, dramatically reduce debt, and concentrate on our key competitive advantages. Having put it on our agenda, we are confident that we will be able to achieve it in the short to medium term, which will help us to realize our flagship projects, monetize our high-quality reserves, and through that bring a significant improvement to the shareholder value. And now we are ready to answer your questions, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you.
Thank you. We will now take questions. We'd ask that participants please state their name and company before asking their question, and allow some time after for translation. When questions are answered in Russian, they will be followed by translation. So you may ask your question in Russian also, and we will translate. Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, if you would like to ask a question on this call, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad now. And our first question is coming from the line of Dmitry Smolin, Eurosuite Capital. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon. Thank you for the call and very detailed presentation. I have three questions. First, on your new strategy, given that almost all your segments, apart from mining, were loss-making in the fourth quarter, should we expect that the company could sell its ferroalloys and power segment, as well as some loss-making fuels? To be honest, I don't believe that it's possible to sell in this tough market any steel assets, but I guess that you can find some bidders for your ferroalloys and power segment. Then, according to some steel traders, we are hearing that steel demand was deteriorating on export markets and in May, and due to turbulence on financial markets. Do you see any weakness in demand or softening prices from your key customers now in May? And also, do you consider any other options for reducing your debt apart from the sale of the assets? I mean, maybe IPO of mining assets this year or any other options available at the moment. Thank you.
Здравствуйте, у нас спасибо три вопроса. Добрый день, спасибо за презентацию. Первый вопрос касается новой стратегии. Мы так понимаем, что всех сегментов, за исключением горнодобывающего, в четвертом квартале прошлого года приносили убытки. Вы сказали, что одним из способов дальнейшего развития компании является продажа активов, которые не соответствуют критериям новой стратегии, я не думаю, что в текущих условиях рынка можно будет продать, например, металлургические активы, однако думаю, что можно найти покупателей, наверное, на активы в ферросплавах и в энергетическом секторе. Пожалуйста, прокомментируйте это. Второй вопрос касается спроса в мае на сталь, на металлургическую продукцию. Он значительно ухудшался в мае. Скажите, заметили ли вы снижение спроса или более слабый спрос со стороны своих ключевых клиентов в мае? Третий вопрос касается также снижения задолженности компании. Вы упоминали продажу определенных активов, но рассматриваете ли вы для себя и другие варианты, например, IPO для ваших горнодобывающих активов или какие-то другие альтернативы? Спасибо.
Please allow some time for, to prepare the question. Станислав Площенко will answer the first question.
Was asked in English. Since the question was asked in English, I will reply in English as well. We stated the main principles of our strategy, and we, although deleveraging is one of the points of the strategy, it would be a little bit superficial to say that we will sell everything apart from the mining segment. As you've noticed, two elements of our strategy concern the steel segment as well. We will definitely be reviewing the asset base and look at the assets, first of all, the ones which generate loss or generate a very thin margin. And this analysis will continue for a few months. So it wouldn't be fair to say that it wouldn't be fair to gauge our ability to deleverage judging by today's market circumstances. By all means, we will be looking not at a particular segment, but at particular assets within the segment, including the ferroalloy segment as well. Ferroalloy segment has very profitable assets like Brask ferroalloy plant, for example, and we will be considering not only the possibility to sell an entire segment, but certain assets, selling certain assets and retaining certain assets as well. I will repeat, this process will take a few months to be completed because we need to be absolutely sure and to present to our board the suggestions by highlighting all the factors and proving that we have evaluated all the factors and we have substantial proof both for the board and for our investors that we consider and we recommend to get rid of certain assets. And this is the answer to the question number one. The question number three, earlier on we considered an IPO of Mitchell Mining, and although in these market circumstances it would be very challenging to do that, we, and because of that, we have postponed this project for the time being. I don't want to use the word indefinitely, but certainly for a prolonged time, until the market recovers. But we never associated an IPO of Mitchell Mining with the deleveraging. We associated the IPO with the attraction of funds to further develop the reserve base of Mitchell Mining. That notwithstanding, we are prepared to look at partnerships and minority investments in our key assets, the ones which fit into our strategy and the ones which we are going to retain and develop further, if that helps not only deleveraging but also bringing in new experience, know-how, technology.
Um, мы отвечаем сейчас на первый и на третий вопрос. Поскольку вопросы были заданы по-английски, то я тоже отвечал по-английски, теперь будет перевод. По поводу первого вопроса, вы слышали основные принципы нашей стратегии, одним из них, конечно, является снижение задолженности. Но говорить о том, что продавать абсолютно все, кроме горнодобывающих активов, было по меньшей мере поверхностно. Есть в новой стратегии и серьезный упор на развитие металлургического сегмента. Мы будем анализировать все наши активы. Да, среди них есть убыточные или есть активы, по которым маржа достаточно тонкая, достаточно невысокая. Такой анализ займет несколько месяцев, и поэтому я не думаю, что нужно для принятия такого решения ориентироваться на текущую конъюнктуру рынка. И в любом случае я не думаю, что речь идет об распоряжению о продаже целых сегментов. Скорее речь идет об отдельных активах в отдельных сегментах. У нас, например, в ферросплавном дивизионе есть братский ферросплавный завод. Это очень прибыльное предприятие. Еще раз, этот процесс займет несколько месяцев, потому что мы должны в любом случае прийти с конкретными аргументами на руках к нашему совету директоров, к нашим инвесторам. Мы должны будем им всем доказать, продемонстрировать, что предлагаемые варианты являются наиболее оптимальными для дальнейшего развития компании. Отвечая на третий вопрос, действительно, ранее мы рассматривали для себя IPO Mitchell Mining, горнодобывающего сегмента Mitchell. В текущих рыночных условиях это было бы по меньшей мере провести непросто, поэтому мы такое решение сейчас отложили. Я не могу сказать, что навсегда, но во всяком случае на достаточно длительный период, пока рынок не восстановится. И мы никогда не думали об IPO как о способе снижения задолженности. Это скорее для нас был всегда способ привлечь дополнительные средства в диверсификацию развития ресурсной базы Mitchell Mining. Это был способ найти партнеров для развития ключевых активов, которые мы намерены сохранять и действительно развивать. Это способ найти новый опыт, ноу-хау и новые технологии. Спасибо.
The second question will be answered by Олег Горжов.
Что касается реализации металлопродукции в текущих условиях, в частности мая, то мы пока не видим каких-то ограничений или препятствий для реализации своей продукции. Мы объем отгрузки мая у нас будет превышать аналогичный период за прошлый год, и если говорить про тенденцию, то мы видим ее достаточно ровно. Возможно, это сказывается, или скажем, благодаря нашей достаточно большой развитой сети, сбытовой сети, которая занимается реализацией металлопродукции. Но мы такую тенденцию пока на сегодняшний день на себе не чувствуем.
To answer the second question, we have to say that with respect to the sale of steel products in May, we do not right now conceive any obstacles or constraints in the market in terms of sales. Our shipments of steel products in May will be higher than in the same period of the last year, and perhaps this should be attributed to a very mature, very well-developed network of distribution and sales that the company has.
We are now ready for the next question, please.
Thank you. Next question is coming from the line of Anton Rumenzov from Troika. Please go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for your presentation. I've got several questions. The first one, could you please tell me if I'm right that in the fourth quarter the additional weakness in steel division performance was due to the sale of expensive stocks by Mitchell Service Global, because I think that there should be some large stocks accumulated in the previous quarters when the prices for steel have been high, and by the end of the year Mitchell Service Global should I think that they should have realized them at a lower price, maybe even lower than they have purchased. And the next question is about the recent media speculations about Rosprivnadzor and Rosnidra review of violations on Yakutugal, of mining licenses violations on Yakutugal. Could you please tell the, what the current status of this, or actually of of the whole situation is and how the company plans to act in this situation. And my third question is, could you please give us some breakdown of your reduced CapEx in 2012? And I also, if I'm right, that you will now postpone the development of Siburginsk and Yurnakovsk 1 underground mines and concentrate only on Elgar development. Thank you.
Первый касается складских запасов на четвертый квартал предыдущего года по металлургической продукции. Мы знаем, что поскольку в предыдущие кварталы цены на сталь были достаточно высокими, у вас должен был скопиться на складах большой запас. Скажите, пожалуйста, что происходило в четвертом квартале, не приходилось ли вам продавать по заниженным ценам? Второй вопрос касается ситуации, о которой сообщали средства массовой информации. Роснедр, Росприроднадзор проводил аудит в связи с возможным отзывом лицензии по Якутуглю и нарушением лицензионных условий в Якутугле. Скажите, пожалуйста, какой текущий статус этого аудита и каковы планы компании вот в контексте этой ситуации? Третий вопрос. Предоставьте, пожалуйста, разбивку сокращенного бюджета по капексу, капитал затратам в 2012 году. Правильно ли мы понимаем, что сегодня компания сосредоточилась только на развитии Ильгинского месторождения и, может быть, поэтому отложено развитие Северогинской и Юрнаковской?
Юрнаковской
шахты. Спасибо.
First question will be answered by Stanislav Ploshenko.
If we talk about the inventory at Metal Service Global in the fourth quarter, there is no direct effect from the inventory dynamics in the reported period and the falling profitability. As a matter of fact, the inventory in the fourth quarter grew because the efforts we taken to balance the production in line with the sales took 2 to 3 months, as I said previously, to materialize. And we were replacing one product with another one, and which suggests for the absence, again, of the inventory write-down in the fourth quarter that most of the effect on the profitability was simply coming from the falling prices across the market. As simple as that.
Отвечая на первый вопрос по поводу складских запасов МСГ в четвертом квартале, я не думаю, что нет какое-то есть прямое влияние на отчетный период и на снижение прибыльности в связи с той ситуацией, которую вы описали. Складские запасы были достаточно высокими. Мы в тот момент стремились сбалансировать наше производство и продажи. Для того, чтобы увидеть результат от этих усилий, требуется 2-3 месяца. И мы в тот момент заменяли один продукт на другой в производстве. Поэтому не было в четвертом квартале списаний складских запасов. И я думаю, что вот то, что вы видите в отчетности, это эффект от просто очень низких цен на рынке.
The second question will be answered by Evgeny Mikhail.
Действительно, в четвертом квартале 2011 года и первом квартале 2012 года в Южном Кузбассе и Якутугле прошли плановые проверки Росприроднадзора по вопросам соблюдения недропользователями условий лицензионных соглашений. Указанные проверки прошли в штатном режиме. По их итогам Росприроднадзор в соответствии с существующей процедурой направил Роснедра представление о выявленных нарушениях. Должен отметить, что значительное большинство нарушений, допущенных недропользователями, связаны с технологическими особенностями разработки лицензионных участков и являются предметом внимания и постоянной работы наших специалистов. К моменту рассмотрения информации о нарушениях специальной комиссии Роснедр, уполномоченной по действующему порядку рассматривать такие вопросы, Южный Кузбасс и Якутуголь уже устранили большую часть замечаний, а по оставшимся представили подробные планы дальнейшей работы. 3 мая состоялось заседание комиссии Роснедр, где наряду с другими недропользователями были заслушаны специалисты Южного Кузбасса и Якутугля. Комиссия пришла к выводу об отсутствии оснований для отзыва лицензии указанных недропользователей. По итогам рассмотрения отчета компании «Южный Кузбасс» было принято решение принять к сведению информацию о принимаемых мерах по устранению нарушений. По итогам рассмотрения отчета компании «Якутуголь» обществу выписано уведомление о необходимости доработки ряда мероприятий по надлежащему исполнению лицензионных соглашений с установлением соответствующих сроков. Таким образом, на сегодняшний день вопрос об отзыве лицензии у Южного Кузбасса и Якутугля по результатам проверок Росприроднадзора конца 2011-начала 2012 года исчерпан. Отзыва лицензии не будет, а компания продолжит работу, в том числе с учетом всех замечаний к их деятельности.
To answer the second question, in the fourth quarter and of the last year and in the first quarter of this year, there were indeed scheduled audits in the South Kuzbass and Yakut-Ugal. These audits were conducted by Rosneder and Rosprirodnadzor, the supervisory authority, with respect to the compliance with the license terms. Rosprirodnadzor reported to Rosneder that there were some violations of the license identified. However, most of these violations were related to the technology of the of the development of the technology of the works, and there is a special commission within Rosneder by the official meeting of this commission on the 3rd of May. Both enterprises have removed most of the concerns of the supervisory bodies and submitted further plans of action to these supervisory authorities. On the 3rd of May, Rosneder decided that there are no grounds to revoke their licenses with respect to Yuzhny Kuzbass. The South Kuzbass, their plan of action was noticed, and with respect to Yakut-Ugal, they received a special notice listing the measures and the timeline during which the still remaining violations must be fixed. So at the moment there is no talk and there are no reasons to even discuss the possibility of a license revocation.
Third question will be answered by Олег Коржов.
Бюджетом 2012 года предусмотрены капитальные затраты в размере 1 миллиарда 200 миллионов долларов США. Из них 200 миллионов долларов мы планируем потратить на поддержание существующих мощностей и миллиард долларов планируем потратить на инвестиционные проекты. При этом основной приоритет отдавался инвестиционным проектам с высокой степенью готовности и жизненно важной для компании «Мечел». Мы определили себе 5 проектов, которые продолжаем финансировать в следующем году, и на долю которых приходится 85% всех затрат на инвестиции. Первое – это финансирование Ельгинского проекта. Мы планируем потратить на этот проект 350 миллионов долларов. Строительство и окончание строительства универсального рисобалочного стана – 320 миллионов долларов. На строительство порта Пассиет мы планируем израсходовать 85 миллионов долларов. Окончание строительства помойно-смесительного комплекса 40 миллионов долларов и продолжение строительства шахты Сибиргинская 25 миллионов долларов. При этом по шахте Сибиргинская мы планируем закончить очень важный для нас этап, это строительство и армирование вертикального ствола, поэтому этот проект мы не приостанавливаем, мы продолжаем его финансировать. Что касается шахты Ерунаковская, то действительно мы приняли решение в этом году не интенсифицировать данную стройку. На сегодняшний день ведутся соответствующие подготовительные работы по данной шахте с тем, чтобы продолжить ее строительство в следующем году.
Okay, thank you very much.
To answer the third question, with respect to our CAPEX budget in 2012, the overall CAPEX budget is 1.2 is $1.2 billion. $200 million is for maintenance of existing facilities. $1 billion is our investment program. We decided to focus on our priority projects that, first of all, are in high stages of readiness and also that are vital for Mitchell's future. And we identified five priority investment projects for ourselves, which will consume 85% of the CAPEX budget. First one is Elga. It will take $350 million. Then the construction of the Universal Rolling Mill, $320 million. Construction of the Posiet Port, $85 million. The grinding and mixing complex, $40 million, and Sibirginsk, construction of the Sibirginsk mine, $25 million. In Sibirginsk, we will construct and reinforce the vertical shaft. And with respect to Yuznokovskaya mine, there we are currently conducting preparatory work, and this project will be fully realized in the next year. That's when we plan to continue construction.
We are now ready for the next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Dan Jakob from Citi. Please go ahead.
Guys, thanks a lot for the presentation. I have a couple of questions. Some of them are more follow-up questions. One, the first question is on the Elga CAPEX. You mentioned $350 million that will be spent on that. What are the main cost items in Elga, given that the railroad is now fully completed? And then what will be spent? Is it the seasonal factor that's taking $250 million, or is it the remainder of infrastructure, electricity? What's the main CAPEX component in that $250 million that will be spent this year? And maybe if you have a number, ballpark number for 2013 in terms of the CAPEX for Elga. And then the second question is on production guidance. You produced 27.6 million tons of run-of-the-mine coal in 2011, and I would say approximately a third of that was steam coal. Remainder, two-thirds was coking coal. So what's the, first of all, production guidance for 2012 in terms of the run-of-the-mine coal? And second, what is the breakdown between steam and coking is going to look like in 2012? I think we've noticed some significant shift in the first couple of months of 2012 in favor of steam coal. So maybe you can expand a little bit on that change in the product mix. These would be the two questions, and I may have one follow-up question. Thank you.
Два вопроса от Сити. Первый касается капиталовложения в Ильгинское месторождение. Вы упомянули $350 миллионов в этом году. Пожалуйста, назовите основные статьи этого бюджета. Насколько я понимаю, строительство железнодорожной ветки уже закончено. На что пойдут эти $350 миллионов? Это строительный сезон на обогатительной фабрике, либо какое-то дальнейшее развитие инфраструктуры, либо электрические мощности. И есть ли у вас уже какие-то наметки на 2013 год? Какими могут быть капекс по Ильге в 2013 году? Второй вопрос по поводу добычи. Не могли бы вы сориентировать нас по добыче на этот год? В прошлом году рядового угля вы добыли 27,6 миллиона тонн. Примерно 1/3 из этого были энергетические угли, 2/3 это коксующийся уголь. А в 2012 году сколько вы планируете получить рядового угля? И назовите, пожалуйста, тоже вот разбивку по энергетическим коксующимся, потому что первые пару месяцев 2012 года уже показало, что больше вы добываете энергетических углей.
Олег Коржов will answer the questions.
Значит, по строительству Эльгинского комплекса, значит, 350 миллионов мы планируем потратить. Из них примерно половину мы планируем израсходовать на окончание и доделку строительства железной дороги. Дело в том, что, как мы уже говорили, мы построили и обеспечили сквозной проезд от месторождения до примыкания к БАМу. У нас на сегодняшний день осталось недостроено 27 мостов, 20 из которых мы планируем закончить и построить в этом году. Соответственно, 7 мостов мы планируем закончить в первом полугодии 2013 года. Это никак не повлияет на возможности вывоза и пропускную способность того объема, который мы планируем произвести и добыть, но тем не менее, эти мосты, они должны быть закончены, и их окончание будет в этом году. Вторая половина будет потрачена на инфраструктуру из 150 миллионов рублей, которые мы планируем потратить непосредственно на само месторождение. Порядка 70 миллионов долларов будет израсходовано на строительство сезонной обогатительной фабрики. Остальные деньги будут израсходованы на строительство, как вы сказали, инфраструктуры, вахтового поселка, приобретение необходимого оборудования. Что касается строительства линии электропередач, то мы говорили о том, что мы не финансируем этот проект. Этот проект осуществляется силами федеральной сетевой компании. И на следующий год наш капекс по ИЛГЕ запланирован на уровне 600 миллионов долларов.
To answer your first question regarding ELGA and 350 million, approximately one half of that amount will go into fully completing, finalizing the construction of the railway link. Right now we have a link that connects the deposit with the Baikal-Amur main line, but we still need to build 27 bridges. 20 of them will be constructed in 2012 and 7 will be built in the first 6 months of 2013. The fact that right now we don't have these bridges does not affect the shipments from the deposit and the throughput capacity of that link whatsoever. The second half of our investment into ERGA this year will be broken down into two parts. Approximately 7 million will be consumed by the seasonal washing factory, and the remaining part will be spent on the development of the infrastructure, purchasing equipment and building the camp for the workers. As to the power, as to the electricity, this investment is fully carried by the federal grid company. Now, with regards to our investment guidance for 2013, for ELGA, we plan to invest about 600 million. Thank you.
По объемам добычи и отгрузки в 2012 году. Значит, объемы добычи рядового угля составят в следующем году порядка 30-31 миллиона тонн. Значит, в 2012 году. Значит, объемы готовой продукции планируется реализовать в размере 27 миллионов тонн. Из них коксующегося концентрата 13 миллионов тонн, энергетических углей 10 миллионов тонн и антрацитов и PCI порядка 4 миллионов тонн.
Спасибо. Еще один уточняющий вопрос. На каком уровне ожидается добыча из этих 30-31 миллиона тонн? На каком уровне ожидается добыча угля в России? То есть за исключением американских активов?
Из 30 миллионов тонн добычи 4 миллиона 100 планируется в Америке и все остальное в России.
With regards to the second question, the production and the shipment guidance for 2012, the run-of-mine coal, we plan to produce about 30 to 31 million tons, and speaking about the finished products, there will be about 27 million tons of those, including 13 million tons of coking concentrate, 10 million tons of steam coal, and 4 million tons of anthracite and PCI. There was an additional question, how much of that production will be done in Russia and how much in the U.S. Out of the 30 or 31 million tons, 4.1 million is U.S. production. Everything else is Russian.
Where is the next question, please?
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of George Pozhenitsa from Deutsche Bank. Please go ahead.
Good evening, gentlemen. Thank you for the presentation. I have one question on your Estar transaction. Can you please clarify, is that correct that if Estar does not repay the loan that you provided them, then you will be consolidating all former Estar assets on your balance sheet? And if so, how do you think your debt balance will change? Is there any debt on those assets?
Вопрос от Deutsche Bank по поводу компании Star. Если компания Star не погасит выданный ей кредит, то будете ли вы консолидировать ее активы на вашем балансе? И как это повлияет на задолженность Мечел? Есть ли какая-то задолженность сегодня на Star?
Станислав Площенко will answer.
Yes, indeed. If the loan is not repaid, we will enforce the security, which is the pledge of shares of essentially all Astar assets, and the guarantees from them. And having done that, having entered into possession of Astar, we will, according to U.S. GAAP, consolidate the assets. Astar assets altogether have about $1 billion debt outstanding. But it's important to note two things with respect to that debt. First of all, our analysis and experience of dealing with Astar shows that even in the present market environments, they have been capable of servicing the debt from their own operations. Secondly, all the debt is structurally subordinated to Mitchell, which means that none of the creditors to Astar has a recourse to Mitchell through a security or a guarantee. So our creditors will be privileged in that sense to the creditors of Astar. And even consolidation of additional debt from Astar will not entail any covenant breach, because the revision of the new of the covenant package was performed taking into account possible consolidation of Astar, and there is a significant room on top of that to provide for any negative volatility in the company's operational results. And if the eventuality is that we have to consolidate Astar and enter into possession of the smells, and consequently, technically, that will be tantamount to increase of debt, our first and foremost task will be to bring the situation back to normal, meaning to reduce debt by selling part of the assets. But by that time, we will have performed an analysis of over our own asset base, and the plans of Astar will follow the same rule as our own operations.
Действительно, если кредит не будет оплачен, не будет погашен, в обеспечении этого кредита мы получили бумаги, акции практически всех активов компании Astar и гарантии по ним, то мы будем, согласно правилам ESGAP, консолидировать эти активы на своем балансе. В настоящее время на Astar висит около миллиарда долларов неоплаченной задолженности, непогашенной задолженности. Но тут есть несколько моментов. Наш анализ и наш опыт показывают, что даже в текущих рыночных условиях Astar в состоянии оплачивать, погашать свою задолженность из собственной операционной деятельности. И более того, долг Astar структурно субординирован по отношению к Мечел другими через систему обеспечения и гарантий. Другими словами, наши кредиторы находятся в более привилегированном положении по сравнению с кредиторами Astar. Вся эта ситуация, возможная консолидация активов Astar, где нарушает наши ковенанты, потому что все наши соглашения заключались, уже имея в виду вот эту возможность, возможную консолидацию. И если нужно будет это сделать, то да, технически это приведет к увеличению задолженности Мечел, но мы предпримем немедленно все усилия для того, чтобы, что называется, вернуть ситуацию к нормальной. Мы будем продавать частично активы Astar, поскольку к этому времени мы уже проведем анализ собственных активов, то через ту же самую процедуру будут проходить и активы Astar.
And I would like to add, with respect to Astar indebtedness, all its indebtedness, substantially all the indebtedness, is in 7 to 10 years settlement agreements reached or signed with the creditors when they were going through bankruptcy procedures. So it's pretty much short-term debt, zero interest bearing.
И я еще хочу добавить по поводу долга и старт, что в основном это 7- и 10-летние соглашения об урегулировании, которые были заключены с кредиторами в тот момент, когда старт проходил через процедуру банкротства. То есть, по сути, это краткосрочная задолженность, это долгосрочная, извините, задолженность с нулевым процентом, с нулевой процентной ставкой.
Thank you. We are ready for the next question, please.
Thank you. The next question is coming from the line of Vlad Zhukov, HSBC. Please go ahead.
Good evening, everyone. Several small questions. As far as I understand, production guidance, the co-production guidance for this year implies a reduction from the previous one, which was available on your website as part of your sort of medium-term production strategy. If you have understanding now what of production volumes going into, say, 2013 and 14, can you please provide those figures, say, total production, coal production volume, as well as the split between thermal and coking coal? Second question, what is our outlook for cash costs for this year, given that, we're going to have a higher production volume? Does it imply lower production cost, or at least slight production cost year on year? And question number three, given that you said you're considering number of options in terms of raising capital to reduce debt, would you consider selling the prefs from Treasury? Thank you.
Три вопроса от HSBC. Первый касается добычи угля в этом году. То, что цифра, которую вы сейчас назвали, несколько ниже того, что было опубликовано на сайте компании в преддверии этого звонка. Не могли бы у нас ориентировать по 2013-2014 году, на какую добычу вы рассчитываете и как она развивается по коксующимся энергетическим углям. Второй вопрос касается кэш-кост, себестоимости производства. Если добыча будет ниже, то будут ли ниже эти издержки, будет ли ниже себестоимость? И третий вопрос. Вы говорили, что вы рассматриваете несколько вариантов снижения задолженности и увеличения капитала компаний. Рассматриваете ли для себя вариант продажи казначейских бумаг?
This is Stanislav Loshenko. I'll answer the third question, and Oleg Kozlov will follow with number one and two. No, we do not consider sale of preferred stock held in Treasury, because the preferred stock, even in today's market conditions with increased cost of debt, is a much more expensive source of financing. We follow here a purely arithmetical approach. The preferred shares are basically too expensive, more expensive than debt.
Станислав Площенко отвечает на третий вопрос. Нет, привилегированные акции мы распродавать не будем. Даже сегодня с достаточно высокой стоимостью обслуживания долга этот способ привлечения капитала намного более дорогой по сравнению с другими способами финансирования. Это чистая математика, поэтому нет, привилегированные акции продаваться не будут.
The first question will be answered by Oleg Kozlov.
Значит, три фактора повлияло на нашу коррекцию по объемам добычи угля в 2012 году. Первое, значит, это уменьшение объемов добычи по Эльге. Изначально мы планировали в 2012 году добыть 2 миллиона тонн, на сегодняшний день мы остановились на 1 миллионе тонн. Это обусловлено нашими возможностями по обогащению и сроком ввода в эксплуатацию сезонной обогатительной фабрики. Мы приняли решение добывать ровно столько угля, сколько мы сможем обогатить, ну, и вывести, соответственно, и продать. Второй фактор – это работа Bluestone. Значит, у нас изначально планировались более высокие объемы добычи угля на Bluestone. Такие технические возможности такие есть. Но конъюнктура рынка, которая сложилась у нас по данному активу в первом квартале и сейчас во втором квартале, она подвигла нас к тому, что мы приостановили добычу на ряде объектов, производство, реализация, на которых у нас давало отрицательный результат. И третий фактор – это добыча на Южном Кузбассе. Мы также несколько снизили плановые наши объемы. Это связано с тем, что У нас есть физическая возможность увеличить объемы добычи, но для этого нам надо приобрести определенное количество достаточно дорогостоящей техники, которая позволит нам добывать уголь открытым способом. Мы приняли решение вернуться к этому вопросу в середине 2012 года, после того, как у нас будет понимание, что у нас будет ценовой конъюнктурой на угле и, соответственно, с нашими финансовыми возможностями по финансированию данного проекта. Что касается 2013 года, то наши объемы плановые запланированы на сегодняшний день на уровне 39 миллионов тонн. По 2014 году это 41 миллион тонн.
There are three factors that cause the correction of the production guidance that we gave earlier for 2012. Fact number one is lower production in Elga. Originally we looked at 2 million tons, today we're looking at 1 million tons. This is explained by our at the moment limited washing capacities there and the schedule of putting the new washing factory into operation there. We decided that we're going to produce there only as much as we will be able to wash and to ship and to sell consequently. The second factor is bluestone. Technically, all the capabilities are there to produce more, but the market in the first and the second quarter made us suspend production in some of our sites there, where the net result was negative for us. The third factor is the South Kuzbass. There we also lowered our production. Again, physically, it is possible to produce more there, but for this we need to purchase some rather expensive pieces of equipment, and this equipment is needed for open mine production. At the moment, we decided to return to this issue around the middle of 2012. We will review the market situation and our financial capacity to buy that equipment, and then maybe a different decision will be taken. As to production in 2013 and 2014, for 2013 we are looking at 39 million tons and 41 million tons in 2014. Thank you.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Next question comes from the line of Vasily Kuligin, Renaissance Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks very much for the presentation. I've got two short questions. First of all, about bluestone. On the page 5 of your presentation, I see that the cash cost on bluestone rose sharply, nearly 17% quarter on quarter. What's the nature of this sharp growth, and can we expect the same growth further in 2012? And the second question is about your operating results following your first quarter 12 operating results. What's the current level of your coal inventories in your warehouse, and can you please provide the split of coking and thermal coal inventories, if it's possible. Thanks.
Два вопроса от Renaissance Capital. Первый вопрос по поводу Bluestone. На пятой странице презентации мы видим, что очень резко выросла себестоимость cash cost на 17% в квартале по сравнению с предыдущим кварталом. Какова природа, почему это произошло, и можем ли мы ожидать дальнейшего резкого роста себестоимости на Bluestone в 2012 году? Второй вопрос касается результата деятельности за первый квартал. Нельзя ли получить информацию по складу угля и, соответственно, сколько сейчас запасов уже добытый угля есть, и как он разбивается, опять же, на аналитический и как сущий.
Станислав Площенко will answer the first question.
As I mentioned in my presentation, the increase in cash cost at Bluestone in the fourth quarter vis-a-vis the third one was largely due to a contraction of sales by 9% in the fourth quarter. As Bluestone is largely an exporter and most of its exports goes to Europe, the volatility in the European market and contraction of purchases in Europe as large steel producers began to cut their production in the fourth quarter affected the exports of bluestone, which together coupled with the decreased production increased the cash cost because of the scale effect. Already in the fourth quarter and partly in the first quarter of this year, we took measures to bring the cash cost further down below $100 a ton by closing two most costly mines temporarily until the pricing environment and demand situation recovers. So we expect that the cash cost in the first quarter, especially in the second one, would be restored to the normal level.
Что касается Bluestone, как я говорил в своей презентации, в четвертом квартале по сравнению с третьим кварталом увеличилась действительно себестоимость добычи в связи с тем, что на 9% сократились в четвертом квартале продажи, поскольку Bluestone в основном экспортирующее предприятие, и его экспорт в основном нацелен на Европу. Знаете, в этот период европейский рынок был очень волатильным, наблюдалось сжатие спроса, снижение объем производства в Европе, и все это повлияло на экспорт из Bluestone. Там тоже снизилась добыча, и из-за эффекта масштаба мы наблюдали вот эту картину повышения себестоимости. Уже с конца прошлого года и в начале этого года мы предпринимаем шаги для того, чтобы кэш-кост было не больше $100 на тонну. Для этого мы должны были закрыть временно, приостановить работу двух наиболее дорогостоящих шахт. Мы это делаем до тех пор, пока не восстановится рынок, пока не восстановится спрос. Я уверен, что уже во втором квартале по его результатам вы увидите отдачу от этих усилий.
The second question will be answered by Oleg Krizhov.
Если я правильно понял вопрос, то речь идет о запасах именно готовой продукции, речь не идет о запасах рядового угля, который находится на складах перед фабриками и нужен для технологии. На начало года запасы готовой продукции с учетом складов на предприятиях группы, с учетом складов в портах, составляли порядка 2 миллионов тонн. На текущий момент запасы составляют 1 400 000, то есть мы снизили объемы запасов угля примерно на 600 тысяч тонн. При этом, учитывая, что объемы реализации наши продукции составляют примерно 2 300 000 тонн по месяцу, то есть у нас запасы, складские запасы составляют порядка 20 дней. Мы считаем данную цифру оптимальной для нас, для того, чтобы оптимально продавать и производить продукцию. Значит, что касается разбивки по первому кварталу, то в пресс-релизе мы обозначили, в принципе, все наши объемы по добыче и производству. Значит, объемы добычи у нас составили 6 400 000. Реализация продукции составила 3 200 000 тонн. Это концентрат коксующих углей, 500 тысяч тонн это угли PCI, 614 тысяч тонн это антрацитов, и 1,5 000 000 это энергетических углей.
As far as I understand, the second question, it refers to the product that is ready to be sold as of the beginning at the beginning of the year. And I will now be quoting figures that take into account the coal in the warehouses of our own enterprises and also in the ports. That figure is 2 million tons. At the moment, that was at the beginning of the year. At the moment, it's 1.4 million tons. It means that we managed to reduce our inventory by 600,000 tons. Our sales today are 2.3 million tons a month. It means that our inventory is 20 days. We believe that 20 days is an optimal figure, is an optimal period for our company. As to the breakdown for the first quarter, you will find this information in the press release. Overall, we produced 6.4 million tons. We sold 3.2 million tons of coking coal, 500,000 of PCIs, 614,000 of anthracites, and 1.5 million of steam coal.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Next question is coming from the line of Dan Jakob from Citi. Please go ahead.
Just one additional question, one follow-up question. Additional question is on projected or expected net interest expense that you expect to incur as a result of negotiations, maturity extensions, etc. So in one of your scenarios, you have $9.5 billion of debt by the year end 2012. Another scenario, 9.2. So if somewhere in between that scenario and that debt will actually materialize, what's the average weighted average net interest expense that you expect to pay or that you negotiated for that leverage? Just one additional question on production. You mentioned 4.2 million tons of finished production, finished goods production in the United States. Is it possible to give some guidance for 2012 in terms of the run-of-the-mine coal production in 2012 for Bluestone Group assets? Thank you.
Два вопроса от Сити, один дополнительный, другой в продолжение предыдущего вопроса. Не могли бы, пожалуйста, вы сориентировать нас относительно ожидаемого или прогнозного значения по чистым процентным расходам в этом году? И второй вопрос касается добычи в американских активах. Вы упоминали 4,2 миллиона тонн. Это готовая продукция, готовый уголь. Что касается рядового угля, то сколько в 2012 году вы собираетесь добыть на американских активах группы Bluestone?
First question will be answered by Stanislav Flochenko.
Answering the first question, first I have to say that the company's policy not to give financial forecasts, and forecasting one of the items on the P&L is a financial forecast, so I will try to answer your question indirectly. There was no revision to the interest rate as a result of renegotiation of the covenant package. There was an increase in overall interest rates in the first quarter when the Russian financial markets were still affected by the I can use the word crisis in the European financial markets, or the turbulence in the European financial markets, and in the presence of liquidity concerns, the interest rates in the Russian market increased because both for both international and Russian banks the cost of funding rose. The increase of those interest rates can be tracked by the public market instruments. For example, the yield on the ruble-denominated bond of Mitchell. The situation in the second quarter became easier. There is no concern about the liquidity, so the situation started to improve. It is not in our place to give forecasts about the macroeconomic measures, especially the development in the liquidity position in the global financial industry. But this is a situation which we have had for the part of the year that we lived through.
Я должен начать отвечать на этот вопрос с следующего замечания. Политика нашей компании состоит в том, чтобы не давать никаких финансовых прогнозов. Но, тем не менее, я постараюсь как-то косвенно ответить на ваш вопрос. Когда мы вели переговоры о пересмотре пакета ковенантов, в этот же момент не произошло пересмотра процентных ставок. В течение первого квартала 2012 года российские финансовые рынки продолжали ощущать на себе некую такую турбулентность европейских финансовых рынков, и тогда существовали опасения по поводу ликвидности, что привело к росту процентных ставок для российских, для международных банков в России со всеми произошла одна и та же история. Вы можете заметить это по публичным торгующимся инструментам. Mitchell, например, вы можете посмотреть на доходность по рублевым облигациям Mitchell за этот период. Во втором квартале ситуация несколько улучшилась, она стала легче, уже сняты эти опасения по поводу ликвидности, и в целом мы видим некоторое улучшение. Но в любом случае я не могу давать никаких прогнозов по поводу каких макроэкономических показателей, там, типа международной ликвидности. Спасибо.
Just one follow-up question on that. And what is the average interest rate, net interest rate that you were paying in 2011? So just dividing net interest expense by the average net debt. So do you have that ballpark number at your disposal?
Нет ли у вас сведений по средней 4% ставке, которую вы платили в 2011 году?
I will answer that question after Mr. Kozhov replies to the other one.
Мы ответим на этот вопрос, после того, как господин Кожов ответит на другой.
Когда я говорил про 4 100 000 тонн, я как раз имел в виду добычу, потому что говорил как раз в контексте 30 000 000 тонн добычи в целом по группе. Поэтому по Блюстоуну в 2012 году, еще раз, объем добычи рядового угля 4 100 000, объем отгрузки товарной продукции будет на уровне 3 000 000 тонн.
When I mentioned the figure of 4.1 million tons, at Bluestone, that was done in the context of the overall guidance reduction for Mitchell of 30 million tons. Speaking about, so that was actual run-of-mine coal. So once again, in 2012, we expect to produce 4.1 million tons of run-of-mine coal at Bluestone, and 3 million tons of finished products will be shipped.
Answering the question about the average interest rate, we do not derive the average interest rate for the entire debt portfolio, but if you can follow up on our financial statements issued today, the average interest rate for ruble-denominated long-term debt in 2011 was 9.1%. The U.S. dollar-denominated long-term debt was 5.6%, and euro-denominated long-term debt 4.2%. With respect to the short-term debt, the ruble-denominated stood at 7.2%, the dollar-denominated 4%, flat, and euro-denominated 4.9%.
Мы не считаем среднюю процентную ставку по всему или на весь портфель задолженности, поэтому я предоставлю следующую информацию. По долгу в рублях, долгосрочной задолженности в рублях, процентная ставка средняя составляет 9.1%, долгосрочная задолженность в долларах 5.6%, долгосрочная задолженность в евро 4.2%. Что касается короткой задолженности, то в рублях это 7.2%, в долларах 4% и в евро 4.9%.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Next question is coming from the line of Alexander Morin, Sovlink. Please go ahead.
Good evening. I have some questions. First, what is your expected target level on EBITDA margin for 2020? Second question is, do you plan to reduce production in metal sector if some global markets continue reduction? Thank you.
Два вопроса. Скажите, пожалуйста, на какой показатель маржи и беда вы ориентируетесь в 2012 году? И второй вопрос. Планируете ли вы сокращать производство металлургической продукции, если продолжится не очень хорошая ситуация
на стороне потребителей на рынках.
Станислав, please answer the first one.
Unfortunately, I have to return to my earlier comment that we don't give financial forecasts, especially for such a very long period as 2020. But I would like to refer to the outlines of the strategy that Mr. Mikkel and myself discussed earlier on the conference call. All these strategic initiatives that we have described, they have only one target: improvement, dramatic improvement in the profitability of the business, which will be translated into the improvement of the shareholder value. And since you've given us time till 2020, we believe we have sufficient room to improve it considerably.
Мы не даем финансовых прогнозов, как я уже упоминала, отвечая на предыдущий вопрос в этой компании, тем более на такую долгую перспективу, как 2020 год. Однако мы уже описывали основные параметры новой стратегии в своих выступлениях, господин Михель и я. Вы знаете, что все наши стратегические инициативы сегодня имеют одну цель. Это резкое и значительное увеличение прибыльности нашей деятельности и резкое увеличение акционерной стоимости. Я думаю, что поскольку вы дали нам время до 2020 года, мы с этой задачей справимся.
The next question was answered by Олег Коржов.
Мы уже говорили, что наша стратегия, она заключается в том, что мы должны производить столько, сколько мы сможем реализовать. У нас нет задачи производить ради того, чтобы производить или производить себе в убыток. Поэтому любые варианты, они считаются, считается экономика, считается целесообразность и необходимость тех или иных решений. И в случае, если это решение, оно будет подготовлено, экономически обосновано, то мы, безусловно, готовы рассматривать вопросы снижения объемов производства. Но все-таки мы надеемся, что конъюнктура рынка, она ухудшаться не будет, и мы будем работать в тех планах показателей, которые запланированы на 2012 год.
Уточняющий вопрос по первому.
May I translate the answer to the second question first? Thank you very much. Now, regarding our production of steel products, you have already heard about our strategy. Our strategy is to produce only as much as we are capable of selling. We will not produce to make a loss for the company, or we will not produce for the production's sake. So every time a decision is taken, its economics is calculated, and every time a decision is made regarding the feasibility of this or that move. So if the calculations demonstrate that the decrease of production is feasible and is necessary, then of course such a decision will be taken. But I hope that the market conditions will not deteriorate and that the demand will restore. We will not have to take that step. Thank you.
Все-таки уточняющий вопрос вот относительно первого, то есть важно ожидание относительно сократиться уровень или конкретные цифры не обязательно, просто относительно вот текущей ситуации, как и добывающий сектор, так и металлургический сектор, учитывая цены текущие рыночные, они достаточно находятся на низком уровне, и без значительного как бы увеличения цен сохранить маржу, ну как бы вряд ли удастся. Вот как бы комментарий, насколько повлияет. То есть все-таки компания ждет снижения, и поэтому пересмотрела ковенанты, в частности, там. И либо все-таки как бы плавный переход на высокомаржинальную продукцию даст, ну, как бы, поддержку даже на уровне 2011 года. Вот такое.
It's a follow-up question to the first one regarding the forecast or the EBITDA margin target in 2012. The question is really not about the absolute figure, but rather about an upward or downward trend. What does the company expect with respect to the EBITDA margin?
I have to verify. Am I right that we're talking about 2012, not 2020?
2012 год, да, 2012.
Well, then we're talking about two short-term projection, which is difficult to make in a volatile market. Precisely to provide for high volatility in the operating results, We, for example, introduced or we have capped our debt in the financial covenants with our banks at $11 billion net, which was a measure to ensure that the debt, according to the or due to the volatile markets, the financial metrics may oscillate significantly. Therefore, I would stay short of making any projection for the financial results, but the measures that Mr. Kozhov has just described will ensure that even if the market remains volatile, we are affected least by these events. And our financial result stays or is affected to the minimum extent.
Очень трудно делать такие краткосрочные прогнозы в настолько волатильных условиях рынка. При переговорах с банками мы сохранили в наших финансовых ковенантах уровень долга в размере 11 миллиардов долларов. Это чистое.
Чистый
это максимум, это чистый долг. Да, поэтому я не делал бы никакие прогнозы. Господин Коржов описал ряд мер, которые компания предпринимает в развитии бизнеса в этих сложных условиях. Поэтому если вот все стоит, как мы планируем, как сейчас оно идет, то мы уверены, мы не почувствуем на себе серьезного негативного влияния этого волатильного рынка.
Спасибо.
Next question, please.
Thank you. Our next question is coming from the line of Sergei Donskoy, Societe Generale. Please go ahead.
Hello, everyone. I have two short questions, but before I ask, one follow-up on your loan to Estar. Just to clarify, was this loan to Estar itself or to the company's shareholders?
Несколько вопросов от Societe Generale. Первое продолжение одних из предыдущих вопросов, которые уже здесь обсуждались, по поводу кредита компании Estar. Кому конкретно был выдан этот кредит, Estar или акционерам?
It was a loan to the shareholders of Estar. Otherwise, the shares in the plans could not have been pledged.
Кредит был выдан акционерам, иначе акции предприятия не могли бы быть заложены.
Understood. Thank you. And then two questions. First of all, on profitability of your mining division, I think that you touched upon it in your presentation, but just to, again, to clarify, so far as I understand, the sales volumes in the division were flat quarter-on-quarter. Cash costs, they were also flat or slightly up. Prices flat or down. Was it possible that the mining division achieved a 16% increase in EBITDA quarter-on-quarter? That's question number one. And question number two, looking at your working capital dynamics in Q4, I noticed that there was an approximately $608 million inflow, cash inflow from settlement with related parties. Could you please clarify what was the nature of this transaction? Thank you.
И, собственно, два вопроса. Первый касается прибыльности в горнодобывающем дивизионе. В своей презентации вы об этом говорили. Поправьте меня, если я не прав. Просто хотел бы получить уточнение. Если я правильно читаю вашу информацию, то продажи в горнодобывающем дивизионе в квартал по сравнению с предыдущим кварталом остались на прежнем уровне. Себестоимость cash cost была на прежнем уровне, либо немножко подросла. Цены при этом были на прежнем уровне, либо немножко снизились. Каким образом вы смогли показать в том квартале, по сравнению с предыдущим кварталом, quarter-on-quarter, прирост в 16% в EBITDA. И второй вопрос касается динамики оборотного капитала в четвертом квартале. Там тоже в отчете я считаю, что был приток в размере 680 миллионов долларов. И там объяснение, что это урегулирование или какие-то расчеты со связанными сторонами. Не могли бы вы, пожалуйста, это прокомментировать? Спасибо.
Stanislav Poshenko will answer the questions.
If you look at the segmental analysis and the segment's financials in the mining, we had a significant improvement in the items below the gross income. In particular, the selling and distribution expenses decreased by 37%, largely, not only due to the overall decrease in sales, which was not significant, but most importantly due to increase of the share of sales on the FCA basis as opposed to longer-term delivery like CPT or DEF. Plus, we had an improvement in the administrative expenses coming at the, in the non-profit taxes due to a recalculation of the mineral extraction tax. And apart from other reasons, these are probably the two main ones that led to the improvement in profitability. Answering your second question, when I described the relationship or the origins of the ESTA loan, I mentioned that that loan was extended to the ESTA shareholders precisely in order to repay the net receivables we had extended to ESTA when the market was growing and we were relying on a larger scale of operations. Our task was to protect the P&L by turning the unsecured receivables into asset-secured loan to repay those receivables. Since the settlement with ESTA continued into the first quarter of 2012, we only reflected $679 million of net inflow of from ESTA in settlement of those receivables. So basically, the money revolved from the loan to ESTA back to our group through the repayment of receivables.
Understood. Thank you.
Если посмотреть на сегментный анализ, то вы увидите, что у нас произошло значительное улучшение под... там, где расходы на продажи и дистрибуцию. Сами продажи действительно в общем объеме изменились не очень, но увеличилось количество продаж по базису FCA. Это более короткий базис по сравнению с более длинным базисом поставки CPT или DAF. Вот там произошло улучшение. И еще в налогах, не связанных с прибылью компании, в частности, это был перерасчет НДПИ. Я думаю, что это, собственно, два основных фактора, которые сказались на... этом финансовом результате, на росте в EBITDA. И что касается второго вопроса, то он тоже связан с кредитом Vestar. Я уже упоминала о том, что этот кредит был выдан акционерам как раз для того, чтобы была возможность погасить дебиторскую, чистую дебиторскую задолженность. Она возникла тогда, то есть такое было вливание в Эстер в тот момент, когда рынок рос. Наша задача была защитить наш P&L за счет того, что мы вот дебиторскую задолженность конвертировали, превратили в обеспеченный кредит. И вот эти 679 миллионов мы отразили в качестве чистого прихода, притока. Это как раз сумма, которая была выплачена в погашении вот той предыдущей дебиторской задолженности. А, и часть кредита была уже в первом квартале.
Next question, please.
Thank you. We currently have no further questions coming through, so just another reminder. Please press star 1 if you would like to ask a question on this call. We've got no further questions coming through, so I'll hand you back to your host to wrap up today's call.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for taking the time to join Mitchell's full year 2011 financial results conference call today. The replay of the call will be available on Mitchell's website. If you have any further questions, please contact the IR office. Thank you again from all the team here.